Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Eleven in the morning, 720 WGN. Happy Thursday. Dave Enn and Andrea Darlis, we're kind of holding the fort down for Mr. Cochran today. He's off tomorrow as well. Pete and Jane will be with you tomorrow morning.
Great to have Dean here yesterday.
Yep, huge thanks to Dean. Great to have Mark Harmon here today.
Welcome, thanks, Harmon. Guys. Good to see you.
Always good to see you, too. So, did you guys buy Powerball tickets?
Yes.
No.
No. Did the newsroom buy some? Because I forgot to get in the group.
I don't think we bought any. Grzanich was supposed to buy a couple.
Yeah, what happened to that?
You know, I was so concerned about getting out of Southern Illinois, I just drove right past the...
That would have been the perfect place,
even though
they didn't sell the winning ticket.
And where's our peaches, too, by the way?
The peaches, I have to tell you, they didn't make it home.
What? You ate them all?
Ate them on the way home?
That's okay, though. You know why? Steve, I saved you two Eclipse donuts, and Mary Sandberg Boyle Comcast Sportsnet actually took a picture of the donuts in the little baggie, the chocolate Eclipse donuts from Krispy Kreme.
Where are they?
I don't know. I set them on the side of my desk, which kind of connects to your desk.
Well, that was a mistake.
Gone. Yeah.
Food does not last more than a couple seconds here.
Gone. Yeah.
But you saved him some of the stuff from hot chocolate.
Yeah. See, here's what happened to the peaches, by the way.
So
They were in the trunk of the car.
Ew.
And the heat after 2 days. I didn't think about that.
Really?
Why would you put peaches in the trunk of a car?
I'm okay with not having the peaches, though, Steve.
Moldy peaches?
They were moldy. They just kind of short
I was in a band called Moldy Peaches.
Hey.
Oh, boy, you guys
All
are
right.
Steve Cochran.
Speaking of Powerball, let's get to the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
All right, we touched on number one in our top six at six this morning. Powerball winning ticket for $758.7 million sold in Massachusetts. So some lucky winner. The store owner, talking to a store owner late last night, the guy who sold the winning ticket, gets $50,000. Which is kind of a bummer because here in Illinois, they get $500,000.
You would think you would get more. That's the Handy Variety Store in Watertown, Massachusetts, which is west of Boston.
Okay, so oysters for everybody today.
I'm going to guess this is a long-lost relative of mine, so I can't wait to find them.
Good guess.
Good luck heading to Boston, Steve. We'll see you soon. Now, I always say that if there's a Greek winner, I'll say, oh, it's my Uncle So-and-so, because it literally might be.
It could be.
There was a $2 million winner in Illinois.
Do we know where?
Connecticut, Louisiana,
Pennsylvania. Do we know where in Illinois?
We do not know yet.
Because I do have tickets somewhere hidden away in this building. I can't tell you where.
Is it in your drawer? Your desk? Your shirt.
Well,
your coat.
You know what I did? I took the tickets and I signed them and I put them on the desk up in sports. So I figured they'd be safe there.
That's what you got to do. Hey, if you have a ticket, sign it
right away.
And I think people will
know. Don't do that.
Put it somewhere safe.
If you have a coworker who just doesn't show up for work today, a good guess, maybe that's what happened to them, perhaps. What do you think?
I'm related to that coworker.
Yeah, and plus, he has the peaches, too.
Here are 10 things more likely to happen than you winning the lottery.
Okay.
Just a couple of them. Because the odds are, I think, 1 in 292 million that you would win the Powerball. Dying from an asteroid strike, 1 in 74 million.
Oh, right.
Let's see. Getting murdered during a trip to the Grand Canyon, 1 in 8 million.
Getting murdered, not falling into the Grand Canyon, but getting murdered to the Grand Canyon.
Becoming a movie star, 1 in a million.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things.
Here's a weird one.
Bowling a 300 game, 1 in 11,000. I thought you'd have better odds
than that
of bowling a 300.
Burning your eyes after watching a solar eclipse. Nope, sorry. Yep. Wrong comment.
Wrong one.
All right, number two. School funding talks will resume. Issues include whether CPS can raise property taxes even more. Yes, I just said it. Whether CPS can raise property taxes even more. Mm-hmm. Happy, happy. The four Democratic and Republican legislative leaders will meet today about the lack of an education funding plan. They're looking for a compromise on a number of issues, including the property tax hike, which is not off the table, and whether districts should be required to provide daily PE classes. I used to love gym class.
You got to have gym class.
Got to have. It might be mandated now. So Pep Brady is going to be here with Eric Adelstein in the 7 o'clock hour to talk a lot about politics. All right, this is another good one. President Trump is threatening to shut down the government. There was a lot of reaction from this last night. Paul Ryan says it's not going to happen, but remember Mexico was supposed to pay for the border wall. That didn't even come up when President Trump vowed yet again to build the wall during that campaign rally in Phoenix on Tuesday night. The crowd ate it up. Now, instead of threatening Mexico, Trump is threatening a government shutdown if Congress doesn't make U.S. taxpayers open their coffers to build the wall. I don't think that's going to happen. We'll see what happens. Hillary Clinton's new book is coming out. Did you see this yesterday?
Yes, I did. And heard it. I mean, the audio book is the best. Right?
We're going to play a little bit of this later. But my favorite quote out of all of this, back up, creep, is what
What
Hillary
she
Clinton,
wanted to say and stopped herself from saying it during the debate.
During the debate when he was kind of lurking behind her. She said she felt him breathing down her neck. And she wanted to say back up, creep. She said her skin crawled. We're going to be playing some of that audio a little bit later on. But she said no matter where she walked, he followed her closely, staring at her, making faces. It was incredibly uncomfortable. We'll talk about this throughout the morning as well. Freedom of sexual orientation is now a fundamental right in India. So they've hopped on board. The Supreme Court in India passed a judgment that privacy is a fundamental right for every Indian. The case was put forward after a bunch of petitions were filed to challenge the government, ordering the mandatory use of what they're calling these Aadhaar cards. And the Supreme Court released a statement saying the right to privacy is integral and a right to life and personal liberty guaranteed in a brand new article of their constitution. So people throughout India, many breathing heavy sighs of relief, very ecstatic about that verdict, and many Indian actors from Hollywood weighing in as well, saying congrats to all of us, every single Indian. The state doesn't own us. Hashtag privacy is right.
Speaking of hashtags. Happy birthday to the hashtag 10 years ago. The use of hashtags was first proposed in a Twitter post. And now hashtags are everywhere.
Okay, guess how many hashtags, here's the stat for you, how many hashtags a day Twitter generates in one day?
2 billion.
Okay, what do you think, Mark?
I'll go with 7 billion.
7 billion. What do you guys think, Jake? Steve, Mary, how many hashtags a day?
I don't know, but I've never generated one.
Well, dude,
I
was going to say it's in the billions.
Hashtag
so don't follow Mary on Twitter.
Playing Mary.
I'll say 50 million.
125 million hashtags a day on Twitter.
Okay, so I was
hashtag,
close.
Yeah, you were.
Awesome.
Hashtag
you really
nowhere close.
Hashtag that's a lot.
Hashtag who cares.
But now I see people use them in like emails.
I know, right?
Everywhere.
Now they misuse them.
Yes.
But at least we're not still explaining what a hashtag,
hashtag
is.
Hashtag, hashtag.
There you go. Top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men, and the sixth caller gets a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. More coming up after this.
Another night with nothing to do. We can't get stuck at home again. What to see? What's out at the show? I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GN's Cochrane Show. And what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
And here he is, Nick D, with what's stinking and what Nick's thinking. Morning.
Morning.
And he's giving you the winking.
Yeah. So, first of all, I saw that there's a movie coming out with the voice actors, including Carly Rae Jepsen, right? Now,
yeah.
Isn't she Call Me Maybe?
Yes, she is.
Can you sing a little of it, Nick? It's kind of like Papa Videos.
No, not right now.
Okay. All right. The movie is Leap, correct?
Yes. Yes. Animated film. Takes place in Paris in the late 1800s. It's about a young girl who's 11 years old, wants to be a famous ballet dancer, and in fact takes the identity of another girl, goes to an opera ballet school, and has to be taught to be a better person and to you know, wants to become a great ballerina. In addition to her voice, Elle Fanning has a voice here, Dane DeHaan, the great Kate McKinnon.
Oh, your favorite.
You just sold me.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen it. I hear it's terrible, but
I know it sounds kind of bad, except when you said Kate McKinnon.
Well, Kate McKinnon, and more unbelievably, Mel Brooks provides a voice in this. So I hope the check clears. But I hear really bad things, and this has just been, you know, this is sort of the dumping ground. The last 2 weeks before Labor Day are usually when they just, like, August is, you know, typically known as to be a pretty bad month at the movies. And this is ending what is certainly one of the most disastrous summers of all time.
Boy, no kidding, Nick. I can't remember. I mean, I saw Wonder Woman. I want to see the Charlize Theron movie. I can't think of it where you were just uber excited about a movie coming out in the past couple weeks.
Well, I mean, it's not so much that the quality was bad, because there were some great movies that came out this summer. But with the exception of stuff like Wonder Woman and a few other movies, there were some massive bombs that came out this year. Nobody wanted to see the tentpole movies anymore. The Pirates of the Caribbean movie completely tanked. The Transformers movie completely tanked. A lot of big budget movies either underperformed or completely bombed. You know, there were success stories over the summer. Wonder Woman being the biggest one because it was the biggest film of the summer and no one predicted that. And another female-driven movie made a ton of money, Girls Trip.
Yeah.
With Queen Latifah and Timothy Haddish. That is, you know, made over $100 million, and nobody expected that to make a lot of money. But big budget bombs were the story of this past summer. God, I mean, really bad.
Big time, big time. Birth of the Dragon coming out. What are your thoughts on that?
Birth of the Dragon tells the story of Bruce Lee, but a specific time in Bruce Lee's life. Bruce Lee, as you know, one of the greatest martial art actors of all time, a legend, died way too young. This movie takes place in the 60s when before he became an actor and a movie star, he was just a karate instructor. And he is challenged to a battle, and this is based on a true story. He's challenged to a battle to fight another guy. And it's based on this specific time before he became a movie star. This is another movie that's sat on the shelf for a long time, which is always a bad sign. And for me, there's already a definitive movie about Bruce Lee's life that came out in 1993, a great movie called Dragon, the Bruce Lee Story, with Jason Lee and Lauren Holly. Anybody's interested in seeing the Bruce Lee story, Dragon, that's the movie to see. It's a terrific film from 1993. So Birth of the Dragon, I hear, not so good.
And a sequel to Terminator, Terminator 2. Is this a sequel or is it a 3D version?
It's Terminator 2 in 3D. So it's the movie from 1991.
Which I loved.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
It's a tremendous movie, but it's being re-released in 3D. I don't know. Evidently, James Cameron needs money. I'm not sure what the motivation is.
He's the king of the world.
But I mean, it's a great. I mean, it's the only movie that I can definitely say that opens this weekend that's good.
Yeah. So, there you go.
And it'd be interesting to see it. I guess it'd be interesting to see how it works in 3D. Mm-hmm. I I'd actually like to see the movie on the big screen again. I mean, I haven't seen it on the big screen in years. I've seen it a million times. But it's interesting that this is coming out in 3D. And again, this is another one of those, let's fill in the movie theaters at the end of August with some stuff. So they re-released it. So
this is a technical question. Can you wear your Eclipse glasses to watch the movie in 3D?
Yes, I think you can. But the problem is, if you wear your Eclipse glasses during the movie, it'll only last a little over 2 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Ah, there you go. There. But bumch. Hey, Nick, next movie club screening in September.
Tuesday, September 12th at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly the Movie Co. It's where we do our screenings. And I'm showing one of my favorite movies of all time, one of the very best movies of the 70s, Al Pacino in Dog Day Afternoon. One of my favorite movies, one of the best performances of all time. And to see it on the big screen, it's 4K digitally remastered. It's $14 to get in. Parking and popcorn is free. And to see an absolute classic like this on the big screen is going to be really special. So movie starts at 8. You can come at 7, have some dinner. I introduce the movie at 8. And we have a little talk afterwards. And this was the movie that when I saw it, I was 10 years old when it came out. I saw it in the theater. That taught me what acting was. It was the first movie where I realized, oh, I see. This is good acting because every single performance in it is phenomenal. One of my favorite movies, Dog Day Afternoon. Yeah.
Awesome. So that's Dog Day Afternoon, Tuesday, September 12th at the AMC Rosemont 18. Nick, thank you so much.
Hey, my pleasure.
Okay, see you, my friend. That's the great Nick DiGilio. You can hear him every night on this radio station, every morning, I should say. But that'd be a good group, to go see Dog Day Afternoon.
Should we do that?
Yeah, we always say we're going to go, and then we never do. I'll go.
10 years old to see Dog Day Afternoon. That's aggressive.
Right? How about a little, little Nick DiGilio learning about film from Dog Day Afternoon?
That's that could shape a child. I think you guys should go. By the way, Tuesday night, Dave, the Rosemont.
You and I?
Sure, why not?
Not happening.
Just make sure you get the seat between you guys. Right. Big stories coming up next on WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I continue to believe Mr. Trump will not be president. And the reason is because I have a lot of faith in the American people.
Donald Trump cannot win a choice election.
Mm. Without college-educated white voters, Donald Trump can't win.
Because if Donald Trump can't win over the overwhelming majority of members of his own party, he just can't get the votes he needs to win the election.
Can Donald Trump win a general election?
My view is no, but we'll see.
One in the morning, 720 WGN. No, it's not November of 2016. It's August of 2017, but 12 days that stunned a nation, how Hillary Clinton lost, is new directed by NBC News' Mark Murray. Pat Brady, this is Pat Brady. Welcome, by the way.
What's good to
happy
be here?
Happy Thursday to you.
Yeah, happy Thursday.
Mark, this is Mark Murray has drafted this, written this, conducted a bunch of interviews. It really is kind of a synopsis on how Hillary Clinton lost the election. This is a very poignant piece.
Yeah, or how Donald Trump won.
Right, exactly. I think I still tend to think of it as how Hillary Clinton lost the election. She clearly led in the polls, looked like the campaign was actually trying to run up the score at this point, and just as the race was about to turn upside down, it did.
Yeah, this article, the research he did, is about the last 12 days mm-hmm. of the election, which were critical. And if you talk to the Clinton people, it's all because of the FBI Director Comey opening and then closing the investigation into the emails. And if you talk to the Trump people, they think that, according to this article, which I think is true, that Hillary Clinton had a certain floor and ceiling and she was right in the middle and she wasn't going anywhere. And so it ended up towards the close on when people actually went to vote on Election Day mm-hmm. that Donald Trump won bigly, to use one of his words, and particularly in the states that he needed to. He won in the Michigan and Wisconsin. And states he needed to win the election.
I would even go out on a limb and say it was probably one of the most stunning upsets in U.S. political history.
Well, you know what I want to talk to him about, though, too, and I agree with you. I mean, those clips you had on the intro about there's no way he can win, I said that for 2 years.
Right, right.
Of course,
you did. On this show.
On this show for 2 years, and I said it during the primary. But he ended up winning. But I think the interesting thing when you look at the analysis from the Clinton people is they affix all the blame on the Comey letter or on the Comey announcing he's going to reinvestigate the email scandal. But you never hear from the Clinton campaign. They never had a message.
No. Or really a huge retort. Mark Murray joins us now. Morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thank you for being with us. Some of this, I think we all, as I just said to Pat, not only one of the most stunning upsets in U.S. history, everybody, Democrat, Republican, Hillary Clinton herself, maybe even Donald Trump to a point, woke up the next day kind of scratching their head saying, oh my gosh, this actually happened.
Yeah, and you guys, I think, hit at some of the really big theories about the result we ended up happening, you know, whether, you know, people touching on James Comey, not having a message, Hillary Clinton didn't go to Wisconsin to campaign. I think there are a million different reasons why you could end up saying that Trump won and Hillary Clinton lost when the election was decided by about 80,000 votes in three battleground states. But to me, the story, as I was doing my research and talking with top Clinton and Trump officials from the 2016 campaign, was that the biggest maybe story of 2016 was how it seemed to be a race that was out of reach on October 27th, so 12 days before the election, and then was able to be in a position where Donald Trump was able to pull off that humongous upset. And so what ended up happening in those 12 days was crucial. You did have Comey, but you also had a much more disciplined Donald Trump. And also, as you mentioned, a Hillary Clinton campaign that was struggling to kind of find any way to regain momentum. And you add up all of those things, and that put Donald Trump in a position to win, even though he still wasn't even in the driver's seat, and many people in his campaign didn't think so, but he got close enough to pull off the upset.
Mark, what happened, though, in the key states, Pennsylvania, North Carolina? The state polls had her ahead, significantly ahead, and then all of a sudden, election night, it was literally like you just pulled the tablecloth out and all the dishes, instead of standing upright, just fell off to the side.
Yeah, and again, I think that's still one of the biggest mysteries. But in my research and what, you know, those 12 days, the last day was election day. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot in you end up having states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan that don't have a lot of early voting. Well, according to the exit polls, people who made up their mind in the last week of the election broke for Donald Trump by double digits in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And so something did happen. I mean, you know, I wasn't able to find a reason why, but something did happen where he was able to clobber her on day of voting. Let me give you one other example that was really important. In Florida, Hillary Clinton ended up winning the early vote by 4 points. 70% of the state voted early in the key state, battleground state of Florida, and she won those early voters by 4 points. So mathematically, with the 30% left, Donald Trump needed to win those people by 8 points or more. He ended up winning them by 13 points. And so her collapse and his surge on a day of voting on election day was one of those very important days in the last 12 days that decided the race.
Well, you know, Mark, was it truly a collapse? Or we've talked about this on this show for a couple of years, that the polling has been notoriously inaccurate in the last couple of years. Was it as much a collapse as Team Clinton thought? Or did they just not have the numbers right or underestimate the message, whether you liked it or not, of Donald Trump of Make America Great Again versus vote for me because I'm not Donald Trump, which is what the Clinton campaign was. That's basically all she was talking about the last 12 days.
So the polling is a really complicated story. As it turned out, the national polls were pretty spot on, particularly compared to 2012 and even 2008. Hillary Clinton ended up winning the national popular vote by 2 percentage points. The final polls had her up by 3. So the national polls weren't off. But where they were really off were in the battlegrounds, particularly, as you mentioned, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and in Michigan. And that ended up giving a false sense that after the Comey issue, that the polls still showed that she was ahead and that she was in the driver's seat in the election. And in my own research and reporting, it just wasn't the public polls. It was the private internal polling. The Clinton campaign was up by 6 points in Wisconsin, they had, even after Comey. The Trump campaign admitted to me that Hillary Clinton was ahead in their polls in Wisconsin, although by a smaller margin. And so everything was a little bit off. And I think the question is, you know, were those states always going to be off, or did something end up happening in those 12 days? I would say one other thing that kind of led a lot of people in the conventional wisdom to be off in those states. When you talked about a presidential battleground state, and we're talking the Pennsylvanias and the Wisconsins and Virginias, normally in the past cycles since I've been covering American politics, 2000, 2004, 2008, and 2012, that those states pretty much mirror the national average. You know, you take out the Illinois and the Californias and the New Yorks on the Democratic side, you take out the Texases and Nebraskas on the Republican side, and those battleground states usually reflect the national average. Well, 2016, you could throw that out the window. And I think that was one of the pieces of conventional wisdom that was really off.
Hey, and this is a great piece, and everybody should read it if they're interested in this election. But the one thing, and I'm not a Trump fan. I've been bashing him for 2 years on this program. But the one thing that just still kind of amazes me with the Team Clinton, there's no real introspection on what they did from a messaging perspective or what she just did as a candidate. She seemed, and I think one of the reasons she lost is there were a lot of people that just didn't like her and didn't want to vote for her that might have voted for another Democrat. Did you get any of that from them and talking to them?
So they were very candid to me in that they were worried those last 12 days of the election because they felt like that Hillary Clinton's strengths were at the events that the campaigns could plan around. So the conventions, for example, the Democratic convention was much more successful than the Republican one, and Hillary Clinton's numbers went up. She ended up winning all three debates according to the Snap polls. They liked that. where they thought that they were adrift and in trouble was when they got away from those events, where, and particularly when there was a perception, oh, Hillary Clinton's going to win. What is her cabinet going to look like? What does her transition look like? What's in her emails? Why isn't she honest and trustworthy? That when you got away from the debates and the conventions, that she was very vulnerable. And so the campaign operatives that I spoke to on the Clinton side ended up saying, we did think that she was vulnerable to some type of October surprise. They were desperately trying to have a gimmick where they would propose a fourth presidential debate, according to my reporting. They were putting out news that Joe Biden might be Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State. They were saying, hey, we're going to go campaign in Arizona, all to be able to kind of get people off the, hey, Hillary Clinton's a front runner. She has email problems. She's not honest and trustworthy. And they, every time that it seemed that Hillary Clinton was in the driver's seat, their campaign really did worry that they always thought that was her weakest point. And what were the last 12 days of the election when we were going into it? Hillary Clinton in the driver's seat as the front runner. And as the campaign put it, to me, that was maybe one of the worst places and positions for her to be in.
Your research is really interesting, Mark, too. And I agree with you, being at the Democratic and the Republican conventions. I walked out of the Democratic convention feeling like I'd just been to a big party. And the Republicans, I felt like I had just been to a couple of speeches. You know,
oh, the Republican. I was at the Republican.
Oh my gosh.
It was a disaster.
It completely was.
But you got to credit the Obamas with a lot of the success.
Oh, sure.
Of the Democrats. Those were a couple of great speeches. And sent her off in great fashion. I mean, she had everything, the money, the institutional backing, experience, everything. And it just, like this article shows, just fell apart in the last 12 days.
Also, I love in your article, not love it, but what you point out, too, with regard to Comey, because everybody says that the emails are what really did Hillary Clinton in, that the announcement, even at the onset, was so vague, and Donald Trump and his campaign just pounced on that. And I think that created that vulnerability that you were just speaking to, Mark.
Yeah, and so, you know, when you look back on that Comey announcement, he didn't say, oh my gosh, we're investigating Hillary Clinton's emails, there's something wrong, this is a new investigation. He said, hey, we've actually found something that's going to take us time to look into it. They may or may not be pertinent. We're going to keep you informed, Congress. Well, the way that Donald Trump ended up seizing on that story, saying, this is the greatest scandal since Watergate. This is going to lead to endless investigations. This is going to detract from her ability to govern, was a strong, powerful message that came from him that he was consistent with over the last 12 days. But it also, and when you look at that rhetoric and how the message that he used, it also did also foreshadow the first 7 months of the Trump administration as it relates to Russia and that ongoing investigation when you're talking about scandals, controversies, and an inability to govern. So I found that to be pretty interesting in my reporting and research.
It's a great piece, Mark. It's 12 days that stunned a nation, how Hillary Clinton lost, by you, NBC's Mark Murray. And where can we follow you, Mark?
At M. Murray Politics on Twitter and NBCNews.com digitally.
A great article. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks okay. So much, guys. Really
see
appreciate
you, Mark.
It.
Bye. What a great story. What a great article. My
fascinating
God,
stuff.
Really goes into it. And read it, because it's fantastic.
It's and you know it's good for, as a Republican, Hillary Clinton's got a new book out.
Oh, yes.
More Hillary.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that'll
tease.
Help our fundraising.
Good tease. We're going to talk about that next. Is the Steve Cochran Show. Dave Venn and Andrea Darlis in for Steve on 720 WGN.
This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm all right song. My power's turned on. Starting right now, I'll be strong.
Remember that? July 2016. Hillary Clinton's.
Oh, I've been hearing that for about 25
song.
Years.
That's
nothing new.
Oh.
It's good, though. She wrote her book. She's going to explain what happened in the election.
She is.
I can't wait till it comes out. The clips were great yesterday.
It's called What Happened. I don't think I titled my book What Happened, but hey, it's
well,
going to be the number one.
What Happened, .. You lost.
Yeah.
I mean, it's over.
It's just called What Happened. Some great excerpts yesterday. Hillary Clinton, we learned a little bit about what's going to be in the book. I actually can't wait to read it. But how she felt about during the debate when Donald Trump was kind of lurking behind her and standing. It was kind of that image that was captured and memed and Facebooked all over and social media and everywhere. And she's now saying what she would have done.
Back yeah, up, you creep. Know, you know, that's Hillary speak. Kind of like when she dodged the bullets in Bosnia and the Rose law firm billing records. I went back and watched the video just to see.
We have a little bit of that.
Yeah.
All right.
You going to play it? Okay, go.
Let's listen.
It was incredibly uncomfortable. He was literally breathing down my neck. My skin crawled. Well, what would you do? Do you stay calm, keep smiling, and carry on as if he weren't repeatedly invading your space? Or do you turn, look him in the eye, and say loudly and clearly, "Back up, you creep. Get away from me. I know you love to intimidate women, but you can't intimidate me, so back up." I chose option A. I kept my cool, aided by a lifetime of dealing with difficult men trying to throw me off. I did, however, grip the microphone extra hard. I wonder, though, whether I should have chosen option B. It certainly would have been better TV.
Yeah, it would have been
Hillary Clinton.
Pat, what do you think would have happened had she chosen option B?
With Trump, who knows, he might have hit her back. That's how big of a, I don't know. But the thing is, I listened to that, and I'm not here to Hillary bash, but I watched it again. And I'm not defending Trump, but he was three feet behind her. Mm-hmm. It wasn't literally breathing down her neck. And all she had to do was move over 2 feet. That forum is terrible for that. McCain had the same problem with President Obama in 2008, where he was roaming around behind him because they make you go over to that section of the crowd. And they did a whole SNL skit on Senator McCain, who's basically just trying to find a place to stand. And if you really look at it, Trump was actually trying to back up. So, again, with Hillary, there's Hillary truth, and then there's what really happened. I go back and watch the tape.
I would have loved to have just seen her turn around and go, "Yes, excuse me," or to say something. You know, that could have actually been a pivotal moment. Maybe poke a little fun at yourself.
Or it might have backfired, and she didn't a lot of fun of herself ever.
No, that's very true. What happened is the audiobook coming out. We'll get to the news right after this on WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Show is never grazing in the grass. Grazing in the grass is a
guest. 7:11 in the morning, 720 WGN. It is the Steve Cochran Show. Steve taking a couple of days off for some much-needed R&R. Dave and I are here with you today. Mark Carman's with us as well. Mary Sandberg Boyle, Mike Jacobson producing the program, Steve Grzanich in news, Mary Vandeveld in traffic. Having a lot of fun today. Pete and Jane will be with you tomorrow as well, and Steve is back next week. All right, as we continue with the program, so many great companies have so many great internships, Dave, and Exelon is no stranger to bringing on young students to get some hands-on experience as part of their internship. We're excited to have in our studio today Paul Dempsey, the Senior Manager of Midwest Communications for Exelon Nuclear, and Jessica Ramirez, a student from Westlawn who's actually working as a nuclear engineer this summer at Exelon. So thank you both for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Paul, tell us about the program.
It's a program we run annually at Exelon, bringing about more than 100 engineers, both to our plants in Illinois and out east, and also a couple dozen technical interns. So engineers going through different parts of the program, helping regular staffers there with things they do during the summer, and then our technical interns working in places like chemistry and operations, maintenance shops, things like that. So we have the folks, you know, doing, I'll say, office work and then helping the engineering staff, and then folks with the hands-on jobs as well.
What are the qualifications for the interns?
A lot of the interns are from schools. Jessica's from University of Illinois. Degree programs like that for a lot of our some whistling.
Okay, go ahead and do it right now.
Right,
just
ILL,
get it out
Jessica.
Of the way.
I and I. Gotta do it.
So, you know, it's a rigorous process. So we do go out to a lot of the colleges, try to get the folks in for the intern program for the engineering. Really, the tech interns, it's just two-year technical schools that they can get into. So any kids who are out there thinking they're going to go to college and get a job, you know, we take it through that way. Or folks who aren't sure about a four-year college, I'm going to go to a two-year technical school. Absolutely, we'll bring those folks in as well.
Our internships, Dave, do you remember getting coffee, putting paper in the copier machine?
I used to run to the White Hen Pantry to get sandwiches.
Jessica's going, back in my day.
I loved the White Hen. That's a great memory, Dave. Thank you for bringing
Isn't
it up.
Isn't that right? Yeah. So, Jessica, you're studying engineering at the University of Illinois, one of the top engineering schools in the country. How did you get interested in engineering, first of all?
In high school, pre-calc is my favorite. I don't know if that's the case for anyone else in the room.
Not me.
Physics,
oh, yeah, me too.
A close runner-up. So it just seemed kind of like the most logical choice for me. It was kind of a no-brainer. I wanted to be an engineer, so That's how I got into that. And luckily, during my internship, I did not have to fetch anyone coffee. So.
Nuclear engineering, though.
I relate, Jessica, just so you know. Right
It's right Mark here. Mark can relate to you. Nuclear engineering. I mean, that's a very hard specialty.
Yeah, so I'm actually, my major is mechanical engineering, which is cool that I can apply it to a lot of different industries. I hadn't really considered nuclear until this past school year when a recruiter came up to me and was like, hey, I'm going to steal you over to nuclear. And I was like, okay, sure. And I don't regret it one bit. I love it. So definitely.
How did you hear about Exelon and the program?
So they do career fairs. They send recruiters and... I actually had friends who had interned at Exelon, people that were graduated now, and they highly recommended it to me and told me that it would be an amazing opportunity. And that's introduced me to Recruiter, and that's how I got into the program.
Is this a field, Paul, which has traditionally seen a lot of women coming in?
Lately, more and more, definitely. It's we're seeing diversity come in as well. You know, a lot of times it wasn't like that. Those numbers are definitely changing. Our engineering interns, more than half are either female, come from diverse backgrounds, African Americans, Latinos. So we're seeing more and more in a definite swing to it, which is really positive for us, getting just a diverse amount of people in there to give differing opinions and things to bring everything to light at work. It really makes us all work better.
When we all get up in the morning, obviously, we're tired, it's early, we drive into work. Jessica, tell everybody what time you get up and how far you have to drive every day. Give us a little bit of your background to go to your job.
So I live on the south side of Chicago, and Braidwood is located probably about 20 miles south of Joliet, something like that. So if I wanted to be in at 7, and we have security, so it takes a little bit of time to walk from my car into the actual office, I'd have to get up about before 5, or 5 the latest. If I woke up at 5, then I was kind of cutting it close, and then hop in my car and drive for 60 miles. So it was
cow.
A fun time.
Was there any point ever where you went, oh gosh, this is tiring? Or was it more of a, like, seize the day? This is what I want to do. I'm looking forward to the 60 plus minutes in traffic.
Well, it wasn't the 60 plus minutes in traffic that I was looking forward to, but every morning, you know, I was really excited to go and work on the things that I had to do that day and go and talk to the people that I was working with. So it was always a little struggle in the morning, but once I was in the car and once I was on the way and I stepped foot in the office, I was, you know, it was
ready to go.
And it is nice to go the other way on the Stevenson at that time in the morning.
Yeah, exactly, right.
What's the biggest lesson you think you're going to take away from this summer?
Well, there are a lot. One of them is make sure you hold on to the railing when you walk down the stairs. Very okay. important.
Those of us who haven't been in a nuclear facility before, it's probably good to know.
But I think one of them is always never be afraid to speak up and challenge other people. So it's safety is a priority, and everyone really, truly believes in it. And so it was probably one of the biggest things for me to see people and be encouraged to always, if you have questions, always ask and always feel like you can speak up if you see things that you don't understand or things like that. So definitely helped me build confidence, and that's probably one of the biggest things that I'm going to take with me back to school.
What would you say to other young women who want to be engineers who maybe think, I can't do it, it's too hard, I don't have the time, I don't have the money?
I need friends. No, but to not be intimidated, to not be afraid to go into the field. In my experience, I was kind of nervous because I had kind of run into at some point in my college career recruiters who seemed very not very welcoming towards or very open to female engineers. And so I was a little scared at first, but walking in, and I was received by, honestly, most of the people that I interacted with were men on day to day, and the team that I was interning for was the majority men, probably one other woman, and everyone was amazing, super respectful, and I felt that my gender did not create any barriers at Exelon. And it was also really cool because, like Paul mentioned, diversity and how that's a big push for them. They have a diversity and inclusion council, and they hold events, and they really do push the importance of having a diverse work environment. So that was something that I thought was really amazing coming from my background, for sure. So,
well, it sounds like you're off to a great start. Paul, if people want to look at these opportunities, where should they go?
ExelonCorp.com/careers is a great place to go. Last mentioned for the Braidwood plant she works at, I believe, is the only plant in the nation, nuclear plant, that has a site vice president and plant manager that are female. So leading the charge out there at Braidwood.
There you go. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Jessica. Thanks. Best of luck to you, and congratulations on all the success of Exelon as well.
Thank you.
And Audrey will see you in Champaign
at
some point.
CAMS, which is still there, which we've never been to.
No, of course
not. We don't even know the name of the blue drink, right, Jessica?
No, like I said, I'm an engineering student. I have no idea where CAMS even is.
Yeah, me neither. Thanks, you guys. The 719 on the Steve Cochran Show. Let's get a check of traffic now, and here's Mary. Watching Mark Harmon dance to Rhythm Nation. I don't think there's anything better.
Take this caffeine away, will you?
I do it for you, Andrea. Just know that.
Oh, we are a part of a Rhythm Nation. It may or may not have a border wall.
Hey, it's not as much fun, Andrea, is watching Dave Bennett do the YMCA at a wedding on Saturday.
Yeah, wow. I heard about this. Oh, yeah. Pray tell.
The perfect M. He was drinking out of the champagne fountain, and then he went over and started doing the YMCA. That's it was out of control.
You know,
were you really drinking out of the champagne fountain?
I really can't say. I can't say. If Pat Brady says it's true, it's true.
It was a perfect M, though. I've never seen a guy do it that well.
Well, he's got the C down already packed and the A. So.
Yeah.
Who was this? Was this a friend wedding that you guys?
Yeah,
were?
Mutual friends.
Okay.
And it was a great, great,
beautiful
time.
We wedding. Very, St. Charles Country Club. Very nice.
Yeah. Very
fun
night.
Are you guys dancers? You know, so when the music starts at a wedding, are you the first on the dance floor?
If I'm really hammered.
Okay.
I've been on the wedding circuit this summer. Not like Jake, but I've had a wedding a month, including my daughter's. Yeah. So
Jake calls that Saturday.
Right. That's every week for him. But so, you know, after the evening gets late, get out on the dance floor. And
so you did the YMCA. Are there dances that you
He did not do the YMCA.
I could picture Ennett. I'm like, if there could be a video of Ennett doing the YMCA.
It was cool in the gang. It was the whole cool. I'm sorry.
Yes. Celebration. Come on, let's do it.
Oh, man. Was there a champagne fountain?
No, I made that up too.
There was a champagne fountain.
Come on, do it now, because now you set it up. Now people on Michigan Avenue are watching. Or should we save it for the CLTV?
We'll save it for CLTV.
Come on, do it, Dave. For those listening at home, Dave is not doing the YMCA yet.
Sorry.
I don't even know how to segue from that. Hey, Pat, government shutdown, huh?
Nice.
It's all going according to plan.
I mean, I know that's a bunch of bull.
Yeah, he said that during a campaign rally type speech in Phoenix. And Speaker Ryan, the adult in the room, quickly cleaned it up and said, no, we're not going to shut the government down to build the wall.
Why would you even threaten that?
Well, that's a good question. As Eric walks in, it was a campaign rally, and if you listen to his campaign speeches from 2 years ago, it's the same speech he gave in Phoenix Tuesday night. So he's still on the campaign trail, and that was one of the things he said he was going to do, is build a wall. And the reality is, it's not going to get done because it's going to cost billions of dollars, and a lot of people don't want it. But we do need to secure our borders. But his big campaign promise, he's not going to meet. So he had to talk in front of his supporters. That's what he says.
Eric Adelstein, Next Generation. Thank you for being here.
Sure, happy to be here.
Talking government shutdown and the wall that may or may not be built still, who's going to pay for it, and Paul Ryan being the adult in the room saying, we're not going to shut the government down.
Yeah. I have whiplash from this week. I mean, every day...
Eric, this is all according to plan.
I know the people that say, like, oh, he's doing all this is very calculated. One day he's, you know, Mr. Calm, statesman-like, reading from a teleprompter. The next day he's a crazy person who can't put two coherent sentences together. If you read the transcript instead of, I mean, watching it is astounding. If you just read the transcript, you're like, this is an insane person.
I did read it because it does.
Am I wrong?
No, I agree. You read it and you're like, wow, this is pretty wild.
The sentences, there's no sentences. It's just stream of consciousness.
No, but I think...
Unconsciousness.
I think that he's making himself, and it can happen, you can make yourself as president irrelevant.
That's right. That's right. You know, I don't know how much time we have in this segment, but there's an interesting article. There's something called the Goldwater Rule. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that? Where a bunch of psychiatrists in 1964, I guess 1964 campaign said, wrote this article, and they all signed on and said they thought Goldwater was unstable, and he sued and won. And so ever since, the American Psychiatric Society and other trade organizations have basically forbidden psychiatrists from giving opinions of political officials or elected officials. They sort of said it violates the ethics of the profession, because if you haven't examined someone, you don't really know their state. So don't go on television, don't write articles speculating about someone's mental state. Well, now there's some speculation that they maybe that should be challenged, given the stakes for the country right now and the president. Is why wouldn't we want to hear from mental health professionals as to what state of mind this guy is in?
We're but the point being, they better examine him and have that, not just the Goldwater thing.
Sure.
Goldwater was what he was, very conservative for the times, but he was not mentally unstable.
No, and it was an unfair thing, and he won the case. And right. I don't disagree with the standard. I'm simply saying the argument against it is, well, if you do examine him, you can't comment on it because... Unless he waives it.
Yeah.
The point is, you have lawyers speculating on cases all the time.
You have Don Lemon.
Oh, God.
But, I mean, please. You know, we're experiencing like something that is unprecedented. And
you know what's saving Republicans?
What?
Hillary's back.
Oh, again, perfect.
Got another book out.
Perfect pause point.
Wow, he's good.
Hold that thought. He is good. He's good, too.
He's good.
Hold that thought.
One trick pony.
more of this on the Steve Cochran Show after this on WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Those cameras are going off. Oh, wow. Why don't you just fold them up and take them home? Oh, those cameras are going off. Wow. I always hear about the elite. You know, the elite, they're elite. I went to better schools than they did. I was a better student than they were. I live in a bigger, more beautiful apartment, and I live in the White House, too, which is really great. I think, you know what? I think we're the elites. They're not the elites.
Wow. Never thought of us as elites. Well, you kind of are a little bit.
I guess.
When are the assaults on the media going to stop? Oh, wait, never?
No. Do you see that
20 minutes at that speech in Phoenix?
Yeah, blaming the media for dividing what? The country.
Right. But then at the same time saying, put the cameras on me. Oh, turn the cameras over here. We saw that at the RNC too, Pat. When turn the cameras this way, focus on this, don't focus on it. And then in the next breath, ripping the media.
Yeah, but it's not working right now. He's lost 10 points in the last 10 days amongst Republicans. And he's losing 34-35% in the states that he won, Wisconsin and Michigan, that really put him over the top against. So he's really had a bad 10 days.
Can I ask this? And maybe I missed it, and he did. And if he did, I'll back off. But did the president make any mention of 10 missing Navy sailors that were lost in an accident? I mean,
not the rally.
Not that I heard.
The guy gives a rally in Arizona. He doesn't mention a war hero who's dying of cancer.
Or the sailors were on the John S. McCain.
10 sailors, right. American sailors, and he's the commander in chief. He doesn't have the dignity. I mean, he's such a small man.
Well, that's the point, though. He's really my point. It's not working anymore, and he's slowly backsliding. So again, if it becomes irrelevant, then maybe the four leaders can get something done, get together, and pass some legislation that, with enough votes that it's veto proof, and we get some things done.
One can only hope. Hey, speaking of no problems, Springfield, does Governor Rauner have a staff left? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So
three more staffers fired and then one resigned.
Well, this is interesting. You know, he had most of his original crew from when he won election, and then a lot of them came with him. And it was, I think, a lot of them pretty well-respected Republican operatives. A lot of them had worked for Senator Kirk. And after the override votes, he cleaned house and he got rid of all of them, and he brought in this crew from the Illinois Policy Institute, which is a very right-wing, funded by Rauner and other right-wing Republicans to basically bash Democrats, tear down the state, a very libertarian notion that, you know, we can privatize prisons and schools and get rid of all this stuff. So he brought in all these Illinois Policy Institute people, and now I guess, Pat, he's fired all of them. So
yeah, well, they've been there for 37 days, and you, I think, summarized what they're all about. The only thing I would disagree with, I don't think Rauner's ever been really a far-right guy, so I think a lot of people were wondering why he did this, but I think it's a natural progression. He wanted a policy change. A lot of those great people he'd had from the Kirk staff had been there a couple years. But the Illinois Policy Institute has been an absolute disaster for him, the people. And I'm glad he got rid of them as quickly as he did. And the secret of the Illinois Policy Institute is they've never won anything. They've never run a government. They've won very few elections. And they did not serve the governor well. So I'm glad that he got rid of him when he did. And something they're doing today, one of our best, I think, young elected officials is Tom Demmer from Rockford. And he put out a tweet about this stupid Illinois Policy Institute cartoon mm-hmm. with the young African-American kid with the allegedly wealthy white guy. At best stupid and at worst wholly racist. And the Illinois Policy Institute put that out. They did retract it, but they wouldn't renounce it. And Tom Demmer put something up on his Facebook about, hey, this is wrong. I mean, he's doing the right thing. He's representing his constituents, not the party, not the Illinois Policy Institute, not a libertarian far-right think tank view. And they are attacking him now. They're coming after him.
Is that right?
Yeah, that they want to have somebody run against him because Tom Demmer, one of our best and brightest, did the right thing. This Illinois Policy Institute's influence on the Republican Party has been nothing short of disastrous. They never win. They're never happy. And they're never going to win in the state of Illinois. They're never going to be good for Republicans.
But last month, though, didn't Rauner replace a couple of his staffers with Policy Institute members?
Well, that's what we're saying. And the irony is the Illinois Policy Institute puts out this racist cartoon.
Right.
Then these former Illinois Policy Institute staffers working for Trump put out a statement saying, as a white male, the governor is going to have no further comment on this. So they sort of created their own mess.
Like passive aggressive.
And then they made it worse.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
the governor, who was, I think, out of town on a family issue, had to renounce their statement from his office saying, no, that's not what I think.
Right.
But putting white male in any press release about anything is political malpractice.
The Sun-Times last week had an interesting article saying that Diana Rauner was actually kind of behind, not behind the firings, but maybe suggesting, hey, let's shake things up a little bit. Does that matter? I mean, even if that is the case?
Well, she's very accomplished, and she's certainly not far right. I think she's pretty far left, and they have a good, close relationship. And if that were me, I would do the same thing with my spouse. So I'm glad she's a very bright and accomplished woman, too.
Yes, very much so.
But I think it's more of a natural progression on the turnover at the time. But the governor was not well served by these people, and I'm glad he did what he did last night.
Look, the final thing I'd say is I'm glad he got rid of these IPI people because I think their views are wacky. I think they're really way out of the mainstream. But what I would say is there's concern here that there's a sort of flailing going on with this governor. There's sort of no compass as to where he's leading the state. And this constant churn of turnover, you know, it's not good for running the day-to-day affairs of the state. So, yes, I'm a Democrat. Yes, I want to beat Rauner. But I also want to see the state of Illinois be successful. So I hope he gets some stability in there. The state really needs it.
Where do we stand on a school funding plan?
Well, you know, that's a good a great question. And I think we are actually seeing some stability right now in a very unstable 18 months or so. All the leaders, the four leaders, have had two meetings. I think they've been very productive. Speaker Madigan canceled yesterday's session when they were going to call a vote to see if they could override the governor's veto of Senate Bill 1. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some progress there, and we're hopeful that there's some things on the table I think both sides like, and we can get the schools funded, get them open, and get all our kids educated in the manner they deserve.
And many of the schools are already open. CPS obviously opens after Labor Day. Some are opening next week as well. So I don't think that's a fear anymore.
The fear is more how long can they stay open.
Yeah. I think it's October 10th is another drop dead date.
Yeah, a lot of them can open, but talking to a lot of the teachers and a lot of the advocacy organizations, their concern is how long can they stay open if this SB1 isn't passed.
And hey, your property taxes might be going up again. Hold that thought.
Speaking of J.B. Pritzker.
Oh, holy cow. /7:51, 7:20 WGN. Dave Ann and Andrea Darlis in for the great Steve Cochran today. Steve taking a couple of days off. Pete McMurray will be with you tomorrow. Steve back on Monday. That doesn't mean we can't talk politics. Pat and Eric in. All right, so I did tease this, and I wasn't teasing. Cook County property taxes could be going up again. Why?
Because we have
why?
Because we have the most regressive tax system in the state of maybe any state in the country, because the way we fund schools is completely backwards. You know, this is a thing that Chris Kennedy and a few others have been talking about it. We have to fundamentally revamp the way we fund local government, the way we fund schools, and get off of this reliance on the property tax. Otherwise, we're going to keep having what you're seeing, which is it's just these local elected officials, they have no other recourse because they're not getting funding from the state. You don't have consolidation of government units, and so they have to find funding sources.
But wasn't SB1 supposed to try and solve some of these problems, like make a little bit of a divide between school funding and property taxes?
It's supposed to even out a little bit between the districts, but it really doesn't create more progressivity in the tax system. You know, Illinois, there are 30 states that have a state income tax that have a progressive income tax, meaning the more you make, just like the federal income tax, you pay a little bit more. Illinois is one of the handful of few states that has a flat tax, and ultimately that means you have a more unfair funding system.
I think a lot of Republicans or conservatives or fiscal conservatives would be open to having that discussion if at the same time, and I think this is kind of the battle the governor's fighting right now, we had some reforms, meaning maybe term limits, maybe some pension reform and things like that. But there does need to be, and I think he acknowledges in the Senate bill, there does need to be a change in how we fund schools, and then everybody needs to get full and fair funding. But I think the debate on the other side is a lot of people want some reforms on how the states run, so we're not just going back to the well every 2 months or having a soda tax or these kind of ridiculous taxes.
And you know what makes people crazy is obviously no one likes to pay higher and higher taxes, but what they sense and what is true based on that Tribune series and some other analysis is that we take more in property tax from middle class and poor people and give them less in the funding for their schools. Mm-hmm. That's outrageous. And if people were more aware of that, I think there'd be even more outrage than there currently is. Something needs to change.
Well, your candidate on the Democrat side is one that's really talking on this issue. And I
Chris
think
Kennedy.
This is, Chris Kennedy, yeah. I think this is going to be the number one issue in the election coming up is this property tax mess and the outrageous property taxes and how unfair it is.
It is unfair, and something needs to get done. And I think a lot of our structural problems, you know, Kennedy would say from gun violence to school funding to everything, because we have such reliance on this regressive tax. You know, you look at the number of cops in the city of Chicago and some of these south suburban areas. Well, mm-hmm. they're much lower because a mayor, this isn't the fault of Rahms, it's the fault of the system. He can't continue to raise property taxes. You can't fund the number of cops you actually need. So it's pervasive across a lot of the problems that we have in the state, and something needs to get done.
You go out to some of these smaller collar towns, the police forces, minimum wage.
Yeah.
And these are the places that need, like the Robinses and
right.
the Fort Heights, that need police more than probably
right.
And anywhere.
They have no sales tax base. They have no commercial real estate tax
and
base.
And it's an eroding base anyway.
That's
so it's
right.
it's just a cycle downhill. It's really terrible. And did you see Harvey?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Their pensions are going bankrupt.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Oh, so yeah, there needs to be something. It has to be some sort of reform.
So that's the good news today.
Yeah, exactly right. So about these statues being removed now in Grant Park.
How about those Cubs?
Right. You know, let's talk about that the Grant yes. Park statue thing. And I think this is, and we've talked about, I've said this before, if everything's outrageous, then everything's not outrageous, nothing's outrageous. And now they're trying to take the Balbo statue down.
Right.
The Balbo statue was given by Mussolini as a bad guy, but Balbo was not a bad guy. Balbo
no.
was not,
no, Balbo
he was anti-fascist.
Was a pilot, right.
He was an aviation pioneer. So we put a statue, we name a street after him, and now they want to take that down. But the other side of the story is not really being told. Nobody likes Mussolini. Balbo didn't like Mussolini, but they want to take this down. So I think we've kind of gotten to a point on this statue, and I completely agree that Confederate statues, and I've always thought the flag, the whole thing, is bad, and we need to get rid of that. But a statue of Balbo doesn't exactly strike me as something that's going to offend a lot of people or even reflect some bad part of our history.
Right. And to his credit as well, Mayor Emanuel came out yesterday saying, we're not renaming Jackson Park. We're not renaming Washington Parks, just because George Washington and Jackson they were slave owners. It's well known. It's well documented. But Rahm Emanuel coming out yesterday saying, we're not going to do that. And enough with the defacing of the statues.
They defaced the Lincoln statue.
The Lincoln statue in Englewood.
Right. I mean, I think that and people have pointed this out. I'm not the first to do it. I think there is a distinction when these Confederate statues were put up. They were put up during Jim Crow as a way to intimidate and basically say these public spaces are white spaces and
right.
this is a white state. They weren't simply put up to honor these people, unlike the Jackson, Lincoln, Washington. And those people, frankly, didn't take up arms in treason to fight the United States to preserve slavery. So there is a huge distinction there, I think.
I never got the Confederate flags for years, why
yeah.
this is people would fly that. Those they tried to divide the country.
It was for the
Dukes
of Hazzard.
Well, and when you see the guys with the swastikas, you're sort of like, I'm not sure this is about preserving the Southern tradition and,
right.
you know.
No, there was one, article I saw where the guy that was flying the Nazi flag didn't actually know what Nazis were.
Right. Right.
Have you guys talked about the leader guy who's now then was crying on YouTube, the neo-Nazi guy?
Oh, I know you're talking about, but we haven't talked about him.
Seen him. We haven't talked about him.
See this?
Or the guy, the picture that was going around, too, he was giving the Heil Hitler salute, and he was wearing a U.S. Navy hat. And then everybody in the Navy was coming out, rightly so, and saying, hey, you're not even a part of our unit. And the guy, I think he got it at a thrift store for a couple of dollars.
Is he wearing camouflage pants and all that,
too?
Yeah. I did see a poll, though, that 9% of the country supports or thinks the neo-Nazi movement's okay. What's that, 23 million people in this country?
9%?
Yeah, I think it's the poll's after the Charlotte.
That's unbelievable.
That's scary.
That is scary.
And that's how these things start. I don't want to overstate it, but it is scary, that Charlotte thing. And then this is why it's so egregious the way the president reacted or didn't react. Boy. Try to make a moral equivocation. Nazis are bad. That's it.
That's the message for the week. That's the message for the month. Nazis are bad. You guys, thank
you. Can
you
quote Eric on that one.
Right.
Who'd have thought it was so complicated to say Nazis are bad?
I think if the president had just come out and said that in the first place, a lot of this would
right.
have been avoided.
Yeah, a lot of things we don't know about, but we'll see. Every week, something new.
But what happened? Part two. Coming up next year. Yeah. You know, Hillary's book is called What Happened. So, Pat and Eric, thank you guys so much again. I'll give out, Pat, your company again.
Next Generation Strategies.
And Eric?
AL Media.
Very good. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks, as always.
Thanks, guys.
On the Steve Cochran Show and the news coming up next on WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
8:11 on a Thursday morning, the Steve Cochran Show. Andre Darlis, Dave Ennett. Poor Steve is off for a few days. And I was just, Andrea, on the Navy SEAL, the official Navy SEAL website.
Yes.
Checking out what it takes to become a Navy SEAL. The physical screening test, the gold standard times. Not that I'm thinking about it. I'm just...
You're in great shape.
Okay.
You are.
Wait a minute.
You're in great shape.
Okay. You have to, let's see, the minimum for a Navy SEAL enlisted, these are physical screening test times, let's see, swimming 500 yards, either breast or side stroke, 12 and a half minutes, optimal would be 8.5 minutes, 50 push-ups.
Oh, you can do that.
50 curl-ups,
yeah.
10 pull-ups. And a mile and a half run in 10 and a half minutes, but optimal would be under 9 minutes for a mile and
easily.
A half.
Easily. Can't you see Dave Ennett?
Dave did that this morning. I saw him at 5 a.m.
We have all heard the legacy of the Navy SEALs, the determination, the strength, the physical endurance required. And we're very honored to have with us in the studio Rear Admiral Gary Bonelli, to talk about a big event coming up in Chicago, the Chicago Evening of Tribute for the Navy SEAL Foundation. Admiral, nice to have you with us. Good morning.
Good to be in Chicago and back here where I started my Navy career 49 years ago.
You started at Great Lakes,
correct? At Great Lakes. I enlisted and came up here to boot camp.
And now, is that where the Navy SEAL program got started?
Actually, no. It got started in Fort Pierce, Florida.
Okay.
Okay.
And so... How on target am I with these requirements to become a Navy SEAL?
They're very good, and the optimum is what we're looking for. And keep in mind, when they run, they're not in shorts and track shoes. They're in long pants and boots.
Right.
And are they weighted? Are they carrying weight as well?
They're not. For the screen test, they're not to do that.
No. I think the most important question, and this has nothing to do with you,
yes.
Is there an age limit?
Okay.
No, it doesn't, because there's no doubt you can do it. Right?
Well, yes, there is.
Well, little
there's
doubt.
A lot of doubt.
Good question. There's always always an age limit, mm-hmm. but we're willing to waiver it if you're a special person.
Okay.
Wow.
Second there career
you go,
as a Navy SEAL.
So how did you get started with the Navy SEALs?
Long story short, late 60s, Vietnam is hot and heavy. I had two good friends in the neighborhood of the Bronx that got drafted and were killed over in Vietnam. And I said, things look pretty bad. And I said, maybe I can join the Navy, my thinking was. And, I'll be on an aircraft carrier, never see Vietnam. I got up here to Chicago. I wasn't here in 24 hours. And you know that in 24 hours, there's God Almighty and a Navy chief petty officer. And they're about at the same level. And this chief came around showing guys scuba diving. And I said, wow, the Navy can teach me to scuba dive? I raised my hand, and he said, I'm going to send you to Coronado. And I said to myself, what part of Vietnam is Coronado?
Oh, no.
The nice part.
Yeah, the nice part, exactly. Yeah. When we, most of us, I think, in the public see, know what we know about the Navy SEALs from television or the movies, how much of that is accurate when we ring the bell and you're out?
It's more hype than it is real. I think if you ask most Navy SEALs, they'd like to go back in the shadows, but the reality is they do tremendous no-fail missions that in this hypertext, hypersensitive media that gets out in the public.
Right, absolutely. Pat Brady.
Tell us about the foundation and what you're trying to accomplish here.
Foundation's been around since before 9/11. We run a lean, mean operating machine for about every dollar contributed, more than 95 cents goes to the guys and their families. We're there to fill the gap that the Defense Department or the Veterans Administration can't do. We're very big into education, educating the guys about options, educating the families of their options. Naturally, we have people killed in action, killed in training, wounded. So we're very much taking care of them and their families.
And we were talking in before you came on about the percentage of the money that actually donates that actually goes to the cause. What was it, 95%?
95 cents of every dollar donated goes directly to the guys or the families.
And so when's the event and where is it?
The event is Wednesday, September the 27th at the Field Museum in Chicago. This is our fifth year. Chicagoans and people in the Midwest have shown a lot of love to the Navy SEAL Foundation, and we really appreciate it.
And the keynote speaker, General Petraeus. I mean, you can't beat that.
A general's general and a soldier's general, just a great man, a great leader of men and women in uniform.
So you were 48 years?
45.
45?
45 years.
And I was reading on your resume, you did underwater demolition. I mean, what?
Right. So before the SEAL teams, there were the underwater demolition teams. So before there were SEALs, there were frogmen. So frogmen evolved in the early 60s. President Kennedy started SEAL Team 1 and SEAL Team 2.
What do those numbers mean?
Okay. Typical of the bureaucracy, if you're an odd number team, you're on the West Coast. If you're an even number team, you're on the East Coast.
Oh, so there's not any like ranking. It's just
no.
East and West.
Just denotes geographic location.
Yeah. So what do you do in underwater demolition? I mean, you it's not like dropping M-80s into...
Back in the old days, you know, these were the guys that they said they were the first to shore. Back in World War II, when the Allies were landing on the beaches of Normandy, they were the first to shore. They were blowing up the obstacles so the landing boats could get in and land the soldiers and Marines.
Yeah, I alluded to the screening tests, but give us an idea of what the average day of training is like for a Navy SEAL. Is it possible to even describe it?
Absolutely. The guys work pretty hard, just in round numbers. For every five guys that want the program, we only take one. You aggregate all those ones together, so we class up about 120, 140 guys. And then only the federal government could afford this return of investment. Out of that 140 guys that start the training selection pipeline, it's a 2.5-year process before I can put them overseas, and only 1 in 4 make it through the program.
You can obviously see like how people do physically, but how do you guys just size up the mental side, how people are going to do under duress?
And it's, you know, three factors. You got to have it up here. You got to be smart, have the smarts. You've got to have the brawn, absolutely. But the big distinguishing characteristic, like any great outfit, is the heart. You've got to have the heart. That's the determining factor. And SEALs come in all shapes and sizes and forms, from all walks of life, from Ivy Leaguers to bricklayers to, you know, kids, street urchins.
Boy, and it's going to be a great event. It's September 27th again at the Field Museum. Where can people get more information about it?
Go to our website at NavySealFoundation.org. If you can't make the event, go to NavySealFoundation.org, and it's easy to donate.
You know, my good friend Bill Strong's working with you on this, and everything he does is successful, so I hope this is a great event.
Bill's a great man. He's our chairman this year, and he's doing a heck of a job getting Chicagoans excited about the event.
I'll be there for sure.
Good, excellent.
And what is Great Lakes' role in training Navy SEALs today?
Today, when a kid signs a contract to be a Navy SEAL, he'll go up to Great Lakes, go through 9 weeks of a special boot camp company where they put the SEAL candidates together with the divers and the explosive ordnance disposal to get them to know what the Navy's all about versus the big Navy, because we are Navy SEALs. Right. So they learn about the Navy, and then they ship them down to Coronado, California to start basic training.
Coronado, not Vietnam. The nicer side.
Right.
Admiral, thank you so much for
being
here.
Thanks for having us.
Best of luck, and please buy tickets. Make a donation.
Amen.
All right, 823, 720 WGN. I'm so excited about our next guest coming up after the news. Sorry.
It's okay. It's all right.
It's in studio. Kevin Sorbo.
Yes, he is.
We're going to wait until after the news. Hi, Kevin.
Hello there.
I'm sorry. Couldn't wait. I'm just so giddy. Kevin Sorbo, we're going to be talking. Comic-Con is this weekend. That's going to be coming up. Do you guys know today's very special birthday, though?
What's that? Oh, I do know this.
The hashtag.
The hashtag. The happy hashtag. Birthday to the hashtag.
Happy birthday to the hashtag. 125 million. Speaking of hashtag, about to take a Twitter picture here for Kevin Sorbo. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll accept my Twitter request now. But the hashtag, we were talking before. 125 million hashtags per day. Isn't that crazy?
Just
high?
Mark Harmon.
I was going to say that was just Mary Vandeveld. I thought Mary. How many times have you tweeted? Come on.
Have I tweeted?
Yes,
I've tweeted, but I've never hashtagged the tweet.
How many times have you tweeted in your life?
Under 100.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 10.
No.
I don't pay a whole lot of attention to my Twitter, actually.
You do. You're one of the best tweeters out of all of us.
I don't know that I've got 7,497 followers at the Carm.
I wanted to be Dave Ennett, actually, for a while, because Dave, what do you have? How many Twitter followers do you have now?
I'm not sure.
Come on.
Fewer than Mark.
Fewer than Mark, I keep trying to catch you. I go down by 100, then I go down by 50, and I'm still trying. I'm looking in the rearview. Dave Ennett's looking in the rearview mirror at me. All right, you want the most popular Instagram hashtags, according to Webstagram.
Right.
New list for 2017. We'll start from the bottom up. Ready? Hashtag photo of the day.
Okay. That makes sense.
Hashtag follow me. Hashtag follow.
That's okay. That sounds a little...
That's original. Yeah.
Isn't that weird? Yeah. Hashtag cute. Oh. I don't quite get that. Do you put that on yours?
No.
Okay. This is another one. TBT. Isn't that kind of over? Throwback Thursday.
I thought that was more of a Facebook thing. More of a Facebook thing, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't ever do it. Have you ever put up a Throwback Thursday picture?
Years ago, but that was
years ago.
So I could go back now since it's
back
Thursday.
Back in 2015.
And repost what I posted on Throwback Thursday like 5 years ago.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of Throwback Thursday. I just follow, actually myself, I follow what Jared Payton does on Twitter, because JP's got good stuff. He gives you a nice Payton rise and grind every morning.
Every morning.
A what?
Rise and grind. Today was may you always do what you are afraid to do, brewed by @PaytonCoffee, yes. Rise and grind.
At the risk of sounding old, what's a rise and grind?
It's like kind of words of inspiration to get you going in the morning.
Oh, all right. That kind got of it. Thing. But I would think of rise and grind as being.
But see, we're already
30.
Up for hours.
Yeah, wouldn't you? Out. Rise and grind.
Yeah,
I'm thinking.
Okay,
a little bit of that.
You put a different
it's coffee,
spin
Andrea.
On that.
Oh, right,
Andrea.
What you should? You know, you and I have had some good talks off the air.
Should not shock you. I don't even know what that means, but sure we have. Absolutely.
Okay. Back
to the list. Hashtag me coming in at number 3. Hashtag Insta good. I've never done a hashtag with Insta good. No. And then the number one for 2017, so far this year, most popular Instagram hashtags, hashtag love.
Mm.
I would think that would be one that you could use every day.
Love always wins out. We're talking about this because the hashtag turns 10 today, how would you describe, if I came up to you and said, explain what a hashtag is to me, what would you say?
A hashtag is just a way of abbreviating an emotion, a feeling, a topic that you want to post something on social media about.
It's a search mechanism, Andrea, for you to see what's hot in the world.
Because people still ask you that, don't they? What's a hashtag? Yeah.
No one ever's asked me that.
Yeah,
but
no
my
one's
mom
ever asked me
that.
Me that.
It's hard to put into words. It's hard to describe. All right, 827, take a quick break. Come back with the big story here on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
8:39 in the morning, 720 WGN. Andrea Darlis, Dave Ennett, in for Steve Cochran. Mark Carman's here, Mike and Mary producing the program. Mary in traffic. Ryan and Vic handling big stories. Steve Grzanich doing news. We are so excited. I'm
nice
super
to have a
excited.
Mythological figure in the studio.
I was writing down author, actor, superhero, golfer.
I'm super intimidated. So, come on.
You should be. Man, I'm going to take a picture of Mark Harmon sitting next to Kevin Sorbo.
Oof.
Welcome, Kevin.
Well, it's good to be here.
Thanks officially for being here. You're in town for the Wizard World Comic Con at the Stevens Convention Center this weekend, but you love Chicago.
I get here a lot. You know, I mean, actually, my second series after Hercules was called Andromeda. It was owned by the Tribune Company right here.
That's right. And
which now is sort of disbanded, but it was hot and heavy back then.
And we learned for fans of yours too that there's a couple of seasons that were filmed but never actually shown, and they might be coming out.
No, we never filmed them.
Oh, you never filmed them?
We never got to them because we were in season 5 of Andromeda. We were doing great. It was number one show in first run syndication, but then the Tribune Company went bankrupt.
Yeah.
And they had to freeze all their assets. And we're the only thing making money for them because the Cubs back then certainly weren't doing too
no,
well.
No kidding, right?
All right, so a guy from Minnesota.
Yes, sir.
Becomes an international star, a mythological figure. I guess every actor wants that life-changing role. Hercules was yours.
Well, you know, at the time it was supposed to just be 5 2-hour movies, and it was just I was excited when I got the role. They auditioned 2,800 different actors all across North America. They come in 7 times before I even got the role, and it was going to be 5 movies down in New Zealand. Made for TV movies. We shot there for a year. Anthony Quinn playing Zeus. I got to work with Anthony Quinn for a whole year, which was amazing. Ooh, but by the third movie, we knew we had something special. And Universal Studios called down and said, you know what, you're staying. We're going to make it a TV series. And it would have gone longer. We went 7 years. We were the number one show in the world. We had passed Baywatch as the most watched show. 176 countries. It was crazy. They were going to go seasons 8, 9, and 10. But then I got offered a contract from Majel Roddenberry to do a series that her husband created after the original Star Trek series, which I'm a huge fan of. And so I said, I'm moving on to do something different. So
I loved it. I love Hercules. You spun off Xena, too.
Xena was our third year spinoff. And our fifth year spinoff, a lot of people don't remember, it was called Young Hercules. It only went 2 years. It was a 20-year-old Ryan Gosling playing me as a teenager. And he was totally distraught. And I said, Ryan, you're a good actor. You're 20. You'll do fine. Now look at this kid today.
Right, you know,
he's up for Academy Award. For him, right?
I ran into him at a Director's Guild Award thing. And I said, dude, throw me a bone. Put me in one of your movies.
Right? Comic-Con is so much fun. You get asked to do a ton of these.
I do.
But you can't do every single one. Pick this one. You like this one, though.
While I'm coming back here, I got good friends here that are transplants from Minnesota. And, you know, we hit the golf course together. And it's just, like I said, when I did well, Hercules aired on WGN as well. So I was on for 12 years on the WGN station. So I came in, I had to throw the first pitch out of Cubs game 6 times over those years. I got to do an inning with Harry Carey, and that's a story in itself.
That's awesome.
So it was just a lot of fun, and it's a great city, you know.
And you, speaking of great cities, tell everyone we're all drooling here too, but where some of your favorite golf courses are.
I'm here this weekend, I'm playing Muirfield, I'm playing Butler National, I'm playing Chicago Golf Club. So trust me, I try to squeeze in a few rounds.
Little club called Medina.
Little old Medina.
You know. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You told us that you'll go out and play 18 holes in 90 minutes.
On my course, I do. I tee off on the first off of the course I'm a member at up in where I'm in about 40 miles north of L.A. And I tee off early. I love to play fast, and I'll play 2 different golf balls against each other. And with a cart, I'll do 90 minutes and 18 holes.
Okay, so what do you do if there's – I assume there's nobody ahead of you then.
Oh, no, I tee off first. They know me, trust me. So, and the workers are still out there, but I know all the guys out there, and it's just, you know, I don't slow them down from mowing the greens or something. I just kind of keep my own game going. I love being out there. To me, it's you know, the mountains all around. It's just beautiful.
What's the key to not letting being a superhero go to your head? Like, I would walk around just very, I mean, it'd be a challenge.
Knowing that I'm really not half God is pretty simple.
Your kids, though.
I got stunt guys who made me look pretty good, trust me. But
no, Hercules was one of my favorites.
It was great. So you know, it was 14-hour days on the set. It was 2 hours a day lifting weights every day back then. But I had a great crew, and we had so much fun, so many laughs, and it was just, you know, I'm just an actor. You know, I'm lucky to get the gig.
Your oldest is a teenager. You have 2 teenagers.
I have 2 teenage boys, and my girl's 11.
And and they grew up knowing Daddy is a superhero, though. Cool.
To them, it's like no big deal. You know,
so
there's other people they're more interested in.
Well, you're not playing Hercules now, but you look like you're in great shape. Yeah, I know you said you
I
run.
Still work out every day.
Okay, yeah. So but as rigorously as you did when you
were No, I don't. I'm old now, so I don't work out like I used to.
Oh, yeah.
But I still work out. I got a gym at the house. My kids use it. My kids are into sports. You know, they're in track. They're in basketball. So to me, it's always been part of life and something that is important. I actually have the number one after school program in the state of California called the World Fit for Kids. And the 3-hour program, one 7-hour deals with exercise. So exercise is a big part of life for me.
We are so happy to have you here. Welcome back to Chicago. We're going to claim you as one of our own since you're a Midwest guy. And okay. You got a beautiful week for golf, too.
Got a beautiful week for golf. And please come to the Comic-Con. Come by the table. Say hey. Get Comic-Con. A picture. Say
Kevin
hello.
Kevin Sorbo at Comic-Con, Wizard Thanks. World Comic-Con, Stevens Convention Center all weekend long. Kevin, Start thank you today. So much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kevin.
Appreciate your time.
Eight fifty in the morning, 7:20 WGN. Huge thanks to Kevin Sorbo.
Nice
he was,
guy.
Off to do TV. What a great guy, yeah.
I mean, you know, even when Carm went up and, like, punched him in the chest, want to see how tough Hercules really is.
Was it a little awkward? Was I getting too close there? Because I was staring at him.
You were leaning.
It was pretty obvious.
You're kind of doing the lean.
You're cooler than me. Can I be friends with you? That was basically what was going on in my head. Is that wrong?
I would think no.
I mean, I do that with Hercules. You too, Dave. Don't you know.
You lean in. You got a little fondness for Mr. Cat. Kevin Sorbo plays golf in 90 minutes at his home course near Pepperdine. Then he said, oh, yeah, one day a week he runs the course. He takes four clubs, takes his shoes off, and plays barefoot.
Yeah, barefoot and runs the course, which has become a thing now.
I think that's the only way to do it, honestly. I know you guys are traditionalists, but that way you actually get exercise. You know, it doesn't take up your whole day.
Run the course or play it barefoot?
Run it. You don't have to do it barefoot, but barefoot sounds fun too.
Mary, you play golf. Have you ever played barefoot golf or run the course?
Mm-mm.
No, me neither.
I've run alongside a course, like if I'm on vacation and I'll see a course.
Oh, well, that's,
I'll run, you know, like up the cart path kind of, you know, around a course, but not on the course with clubs to
I got
play.
Kicked off a golf course running on the cart path once.
Oh, really?
Did you really?
Well yeah, I usually do it like early really before anyone's to. Teeing off. Yeah, like I don't do it when there's players.
Tom Waddle played barefoot a couple times at some of our golf outings.
Doesn't
I would
surprise
say.
Me, but didn't was it John Williams who did the speed golf thing a couple years ago?
Yes,
where I couldn't make it because we had football, I think, but a bunch of people went out to a course and as fast as they could, it was like a relay. Where
wasn't he also naked?
That's a different thing.
It was his underwear,
that's pretty standard.
He had his underwear. Yeah, he used to be naked a lot. Partially naked a lot.
He's in his underwear.
He'd rip Christmas lights around himself for the holidays.
I think he's gotten over that.
I played golf yesterday at the Glen Club with some people, and we ran into two Northwestern people.
Oh.
A young guy named Matthew McCutcheon.
You know him, Dave?
He was a football player. And then his girlfriend, Hannah Kim, who she's a current.
I know Hannah. Oh. I mean, I know of Hannah.
So they were playing together, and she was giving him some instruction. Okay. And so he did a chip shot. Like, she's really good at golf, you know. And
she's really good at golf.
But she also is a good instructor because he chipped it in, like, and it rolled, I don't know, less than 6 inches from the hole. So she was giving good instruction. But they were like, they made me wish I was young and in love. And playing golf.
You're in love?
I know, but we're old. Golf? We're old and in love, so it's not the same.
It's not the same. I'm trying to teach a friend of mine to play golf, and it's so hard to try and introduce somebody to the game. It just with the etiquette itself. Like, don't do this, don't do this, don't walk across the line. That's the hardest part.
Well, there's still things, there are common courtesies in the game that when you're just playing with your friends, you might not really worry that much about it. But if you're with a group of people you don't know, you're expected to abide by the proper etiquette. And it is, I think it is hard to learn. There's a lot to remember when you're out.
Well, it's even hard because Pat and I, we play together by ourselves a lot, and we play ready golf.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you have to.
And so sometimes, though, when I'm playing with a foursome, you know, we'll be playing with two other people and everyone's waiting for a shot. It's like, oh, my gosh.
It's torture.
Pat and I just play. Hit, you know, we don't wait always.
Do you like
Carm is just about to pass out.
I can't. The whole golf thing.
Yeah, me too.
Who's
what
away?
The heck is
just,
ready
just let's go.
Mary, it's faster. It means
it is faster.
Ready, set, go.
You don't stand on what the rules or the etiquette is necessarily. You just
when
whoever's
ready, you
ready hit the ball.
Like,
oh,
when,
like that.
When we all played mini golf together at over in Millennium Park, Mike Jacobson and I were playing ready golf.
Oh, yes, you were. You guys were like running the
you
course.
Were way
we were
ahead
like
of
three
us.
Or four holes ahead. And Cochran still brings up that he said, remember when we played and you were nowhere near us because you guys were all actually playing the proper way, but that's too slow.
But you also started before us,
and
then
because
you
guys were
wait.
Later getting there. So.
We were. We had to find parking. We had Vandeveld on our team. We had to teach her how to play.
Steve was driving us in the white lightning.
I can putt.
In the white lightning.
How difficult is it to putt?
Do you guys like playing with people you know? Or you or would you rather have, like you and Pat, see, is that difficult because you're married? And I ask Mary because I don't, do you and Kieran play golf?
We have.
Okay, so but is that difficult? Are you kind of like, hurry up? Or do you enjoy playing with each other because
oh,
you both
oh, he's my
are...
favorite person to play with.
Okay.
I think that he would agree that I'm also his favorite person.
Or he better.
We,
better.
I know. We have a nice, he's really considerate and he doesn't, he gives just a little bit of feedback. He's not one of those that gives, you know, too much information right. or always thinks he needs to tell you what you're doing. And he, we just enjoy being out there. So,
And then there's not the pressure of having to make conversation with people you don't
no,
know.
No, we can be, yeah, have silence or whatever. But we get paired. We play at the Glencoe, which is a public course. Uh-huh. And we get paired with people there. And we have been paired with, like, an amazing, each time we're there. I know Dave plays there a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've never been paired with Dave.
No, but they got engaged there. And did. There's a plaque oh, on yeah. the 17th hole there.
Are you serious?
Pat no. Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, and Mary Sandberg.
And now what Comcast is it? Sportsnet. Sportsnet. Now it's, what is it, NBC Sports
yeah,
Chicago.
You're changing
so
your name again.
So my name
again.
Is going to have
that's
to
a
change.
Long plaque. That's yeah. almost like a grave marker. It's like so long.
Yeah, but I don't mind being paired with people either. But Pat, we always try to, we played an event one time and they didn't put us together. And he was like, how did they not put us in the same group? You know, he was very upset. So he made sure the next time we played that he said something. So
did he know you went ahead of time and said, hey, I'd really prefer
hey,
to-
you don't have to put us together because we see each other at home all,
all
the
right,
time.
Before Carm kills us, you better change the subject.
Well, can I just ask one more question? Have you ever played Glow Golf, glow in the dark golf?
I haven't, but my parents have taken the kids to do it.
It's really fun.
Yeah, that's it looks cool. The balls look cool. The
my son plays Froth.
Oh, the frisbee golf.
Frisbee golf. Yeah,
that's
plays it all the time. Haven't you guys heard of that?
Oh,
I'm
sure.
Not, I'm not
look
good
at
with
me.
The,
I know
not,
something.
I've never heard it called Froth.
Is that is yeah, that a golf course?
They call it all the time.
No, they have a frisbee golf courses. They have these like poles with a basket, and you yeah. throw a frisbee. Similar to golf, but
college
it's a
kids play it a lot.
Yeah,
oh.
yeah.
I'm not good with a frisbee or a boomerang, so
I've never been able to throw a frisbee.
Neither have I.
I
like,
can't.
It doesn't. It always turns sideways.
Mine too.
I like ultimate frisbee. That's a good game.
Oh, my cousin played that at University of Iowa. Ultimate frisbee.
Very competitive ultimate frisbee. You got a good ultimate frisbee game. Those guys are lunatics.
You play that?
I mean, once in a blue moon, I've done an ultimate frisbee, but that looks amazing. Like I would watch people play ultimate frisbee. I'd rather watch people play ultimate frisbee than probably play golf.
See, now we've got Carmen the conversation.
I'm here. I'm supporting. You guys love your game. I don't want to.
I'll go play ultimate tennis with you.
There we go. Come on, Dave. Let's go.
I want to go play golf with Kevin Sorbo.
You got a Kevin Sorbo thing real strong.
Yeah,
and you
I
were trying
Hercules.
So hard
handsome,
to get an invitation.
He didn't invite
you
me.
I thought you invited him to Lady Gaga at Wrigley Field.
Yeah. He was considering seeing that. How cool is that? Green Day tonight at Wrigley, yeah. Gaga tomorrow, and Saturday is
Zach Brown Band.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice week of concerts at Wrigley, and Kevin Sorbo might be there.
I'm going to Over the Rhine at Space on Saturday night. You could, if you don't have plans, Andre, you should do that.
Oh, I'm going to Gaga.
You're going to Gaga?
I am going to Gaga.
That's
why
aggressive.
I'm not here tomorrow. I'm going to miss you guys.
Dave, are you going
not
to Gaga?
Much.
You're just going to Zach Brown?
I'm not.
Okay.
8:57. We'll have more of this next on WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show, 9:09 on a Thursday morning. And just a ball of energy has
yeah.
just walked into the studio here by the name of Cato Kaelin.
I call it the Powerball of energy.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
worth $750 million.
Yeah, by the way, the Illinois person who won the $2 million from
yes.
Joliet, Illinois.
Okay, well.
God, well, I know people in Joliet. I worked there for 4 years.
So
it's a relative.
Did you get a cut?
I hope so. If I get a cut, you can get a cut.
Well, I did actually. Real quick, I know I did the power, not the Powerball. I did. I was at the Milwaukee game from Wisconsin, and I did the 50-50. I won the 50-50 for $13,000.
No,
and we gave half to charity. Oh, so yeah, it was wonderful over at the Brewer game because I'm a Brewer fan, Cubbies.
Oh.
I'm a Brewer fan.
Okay, we know that. Let's start
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I'm following
Wisconsin's
you on,
favorite son.
Following you on Twitter.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I'm
all right. So
how far back are the Brewers, Cato?
3.5.
There you go.
Oh,
3.5.
Oh,
already. Oh, boy. No. Oh, we're going at it here.
Who's the guy who slides down the slide?
Bernie.
Bernie
Brewer?
Bernie Brewer.
Is
Yes.
Bernie's the man, Andrea.
I know. When I was little, I thought he was cute. Now I'm like, sliding down the slide again.
I want that gig. It's a sweet gig.
It actually used to be sliding into a vat of beer.
Right.
And I think it was politically incorrect. So they stopped that, which is amazing. It's Milwaukee, for goodness sakes. Slide into beer.
Yeah, no kidding.
Dave
right?
does it every weekend.
He does.
I do.
Oh,
I do. All right.
God, so I love you. How did you know this?
Here are a couple of tweets.
I knew that because he woke up with a .08. I'm kidding. I love this guy.
He doesn't even know me.
He knows you well. He said he read you like a book, man.
All right. Wait a minute. I'm quoting Cato.
Colored like a book. Please. It's Cato.
Okay. Cato, yesterday, I can't deal with this inept at Brewers, Torres, Barnes, Council, list goes on. I mean, some of this stuff, don't even go to Dodger Stadium. I'm serious. Just quit now.
Barnes,
do you get a
now.
Little over the top on Twitter?
No, right. Which is bad because it's all knee-jerk, which I should take like 10 seconds and not do it. But I see that we're winning most of the games. We are winning, and we continue to lose. And we have a guy on our team named Barnes. And I'm not his character. I'm just talking about as a player. I go, get rid of this guy. He's lost every game he gets into. And if you're a coach and if you're a fan and you hear the name Barnes going in, how does that not play in the player knowing that the crowd's going, oh, no, we're going to lose? And it happens every single time.
Come on. There was a little piece of you that was happy when the Cubs won the World Series last year, wasn't there?
Yeah. You know what? Okay. If anybody's going to win, I wanted to be the Cubs 108 right. years. I mean, yeah, because the Brewers aren't in it, so I was definitely rooting the Cubs. Yeah. Not this year. Now I'm rooting Brewers because we're 3.5 back. We got a chance, Mark.
Do you think you could handle it if you were at Miller Park and there's like 85% Cub fans? Like you're just a complete minority in your own ballpark. Which, by the way, I think that's wrong. I feel pain for you guys that way, but it's tough. Do you think you could handle being like a lone Brewer fan in your own ballpark?
I am a lone Brewer fan in my own park because people are ready to beat me up when I do the tweets. But the thing is, the following is getting where people are starting to agree. I don't know if you saw the shift from April to now. I'd say it went from, 25% people liking my tweets. Now it's definitely at 95% and 5% are going, he's wrong. 95% are starting to go, he's been right on everything. And by the way, I've made these predictions I really have made predictions. They have all come true
right.
with all the pitchers who's bad. If we're going to lose, I predicted a sweep when we did Minnesota. Anyways, we won't talk. I'm wearing a jock right now. Yeah. Does that turn anybody on, Andrea?
I'm fine
right
with that. I'm fine with it. But your approval ratings are like reverse of the political side right now. Yours are going up, and it seems that everyone else's is going down.
Oh, in the politics.
In the politics world,
yes.
Yeah.
The thing with people talking about the world first was if people thought it was flat, and then people thinking the world is not round, that whole Kyrie Irving. Yeah. And now I came to conclusion that on many sides of politically, the world is definitely crooked.
So, yeah. That's a great way to put it.
I think it's just crooked.
The world famous Cato Kaelin is here for Wizard World Comic Con Chicago, which starts today at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center.
These are, if you've never been to a Comic Con, go. Just to see you, of course, but cool.
Forget about me.
Those are so much fun.
It's so much fun. It's so much. And especially if you have kids.
Oh, yeah.
And you dress them as their favorite Marvel or DC comic person. This is my 14th city. I'm touring with the show. When you see the kids in this and how they believe that they're the actual comic book character.
Yeah.
It blows you away, and you go, this is the most fun ever. And when we have the contest, it's my stage is America's Got Talent, sort of. I play the role of Tyra Banks, except I have private part down. It's different. So I do this thing. We can say penis. Anyways. And so the show is the Best of Chicago. We'll have all the bands. Mm-hmm. I'll have magicians. We'll have I think we have jugglers. Anything. So mine's a continuous show from like a 9-hour day. And then you go and get your autographs of all the celebrities that are there, from Doctor Who, David Tennant, to some of the X-Men. Mm-hmm. And it's
consummate entertainer. You've done radio. You've done TV. You MC. I mean, now you have your own clothing line. You knew from a young age that this is what you wanted to do.
When I was in Wisconsin, I went to Wisconsin Eau Claire. I played baseball. That's why I think I know baseball a little bit. I transferred to Cal State Fullerton. At that time, Fullerton had Augie Garrido, the best coach in baseball, won the World Series. I kept thinking, I'm going to be a pro. And then I got into start MCing stuff. I said, this is so much more fun.
Yeah.
And then I had a TV show, Cato and Friends in Wisconsin. So I knew that was my goal, and I'm still chasing it every day. And now I have a new one called guesthouserent.com. I'm the spokesperson worldwide for the new guesthouserent.com. Pull it up later for the commercial. You'll crack up. It's that funny.
what's the reaction people have when they meet you for the first time, having known you from the OJ case, and you became this celebrity all of a sudden? I mean, fame hits you quickly.
Yeah.
And now when you meet people, what's the reaction?
It's a question for you guys, kind of, because I've never met you before, of what your reaction is. And when I do these shows, I think people, a lot of times now they look at me and go, why do I know that guy? And it's like that look, he looks so familiar. Just going to the hotel yesterday, by the way, Marriott room 14. Yeah.
Sorry, Andrew. Thanks, Kato.
So it's just the people are so kind. And it's like so they recognize it as Kato. And I think mostly they're smiling.
I think so, too. I absolutely think so, too. You had a bunch of, mainly the ladies, found out you were going to be on yesterday, and everybody's going, oh, Kato. I mean, that's got to be cool. People know you by your name.
I want names of those ladies.
I'll give you names. You got one standing right behind you. But who brings her daughters to Comic-Con every year, by the way. Oh, Stephanie terrific. Menendez, our operations manager.
Hi, Stephanie. You look great in green.
I just happen to be here.
Stephanie in the house, and she is a hottie. I wish this was TV.
I think that was a reaction. I think if I could even go on a limb and say you were probably one of the most positive parts of the OJ trial, and then people remember watching you and kind of, I want to even say, and growing up with you and knowing who you were, and you were, I don't want to say the humor factor of all of it, but you made us laugh during a trial that was just very difficult to watch.
Yeah, because it's obviously a heinous crime and nothing. I am who I am. I was just that person. But you know, I'm doing different things now with these shows, and Daphne is the PR person here, and this is her saying it, not me saying it. So she says every time we've gone and we're doing this sort of Chicago tour, you seem to leave every place better. Right. And I think that's kind of like my parents passed away, but that's how I saw my parents. Yeah. They, everywhere they went, they made people going, they're good people. So I'm hoping that the Wisconsin roots, the whole thing.
You definitely made lemonade out of a situation that was probably on a personal level, very difficult for you to be thrust into.
I've said many times that to a lot of ladies, I said, if life gives you lemons, a simple surgery gives you melons. But seriously.
He's not saying that to us. That
not you okay. girls. No, it's please. Stephanie, us. Are you kidding me?
Not us.
I am telling you. I in L.A., actually in Los Angeles, if a girl has an A cup, they can legally park handicap. But seriously, that's L.A. It's so different. Yeah. Is Dave still here?
He's still here.
Quit checking out your Facebook page. I'm here, buddy. I'm here. No, He's on Twitter.
You know what? I'm checking out your IMDb page.
Yeah.
And you've been in like 40-some movies.
Yeah, I'm doing it. I just got signed to a film that's going to shoot in Atlanta in November. Okay. If I can do it with my schedule. It's a superhero film. I'm so excited. It's a biggie.
And what's that going to be? Are you going to be the superhero?
I'm one of them, but it's called War of the Dragon, and it's eight girls that are drop-dead gorgeous, but they all are martial artists, and they become the superheroes during the film.
That's got to be so hard for you. Wow, what a challenging
role. Say?
What a challenging role for you.
WGN, I love you. What kind of show is this?
What's been your favorite role that you've played up until now?
Gosh, I do a lot of things as Kato, but I think I have so much fun when I got to work with Zach Galifianakis on Baskets, and I think that show, and by the way, I love that show. I did a dear friend of mine is Jerry and David, especially David Zucker, who did the Airplanes. They're Milwaukee Boys, Airplane, and Top Secret, and the Naked Gun series of obviously OJ, but I know him because I have a TV show called Sports Hitters. He was one of my guests. So I did basketball, which I love.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you do a week of work on something and you see yourself that you got maybe 13 seconds, if that, in a film. And it's just film sets are, you think they're, it's great to do, but it's really just it's hurry up and wait. It's a true saying.
Yeah, no kidding.
And
you still got Slackerware?
Yeah, well, I got Slackerware. The whole thing is I travel Wizard World. Wizard World's sort of my life now because we're going one city. Every week I'm somewhere.
Okay.
So it's traveling. I live in LA, but it's just traveling so much now. And it's like I said, you've got to come to the Wizard World Comic Con at the Rosemont, at the Stevenson Center?
Stevenson Convention Center. It's a great venue.
I haven't gone inside there. I saw how gigantic it is.
It's huge. It's awesome.
On a left turn, what do you think about OJ being a free man coming up here?
That's a good left turn, and I put my hand off for the signal. I thought it was coming because I became friends with a lot of the detectives. I've done quite a few shows on CNNs, and everybody said if that crime happened in Los Angeles, it never would have even gone to jail.
Right.
So it was Nevada basically saying, this is how you do a trial. So I think that was sort of them saying, karma hit you here and you got it. So I thought, yeah, he definitely would be paroled. It was no surprise to me.
If he comes to you for advice, because, I mean, you're very successful now in the entertainment industry. If he comes to you for advice about a reality show or whatnot, would you take the call?
No, I wouldn't. There's no reason to. Yeah. And actually, there was an offer of in the millions for me to do a show, a reality show, where it's a house guest type idea for him. So, and I actually said, absolutely no way. Right. What I'd like to do is to be like a Diane Sawyer or like yourself and to do an actual sit-down interview where it's very hard-hitting questions. I'm not there to be his friend.
Right.
To find out everything, asking him questions from the first trial to on. I think that is more compelling, and no holds barred.
He wouldn't do it. Would he do that?
Oh, I don't know, but it's I think someone's going to obviously get him. He's going to make a big payday, and I think
time. And you got so much going on now. You got Comic-Con. You got the show in Atlanta with the 8 beautiful babes.
Oh yeah, it's a film. That film comes up, and you know, they got the Slack Aware. Everything is great.
Yeah. What do you like best about Chicago? You love coming back to town.
Chicago is it reminds me so much of Milwaukee. I think that's what I love about it. I like the people of it. I love your voice because you sound like you're from here.
Oh, I do. I don't have an accent, do I?
No. I
got to call my mom.
No. Oh, that's sometimes it's called Cato. This is Milwaukee. You got to love the Brewers. I go, yeah, it's Brewers. Oh, yeah, the Cato's in town there.
Cato's in town.
All right, so people from Chicago go up to Milwaukee. What's the Miller Park aside? What's the first place? What's the restaurant? Where would you send them?
The first place I would go, I'd say the Third Ward, and go anywhere to eat in Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee is probably has the finest restaurants, and you have so much ethnicity from German food, Polish foods. And I think Milwaukee is seriously the number one. I know you guys in Chicago, great here. It's the number one place, I think, for every type of fest, from Italian fest to Greek fest to different festivals. And the food is phenomenal.
Can I say it? And this is for you, yes. The Brat Stop.
The broad stuff. What's funny, I don't eat meat, but that's just me. Because right. I'm all L.A. now, baby. I tell my mom, you breastfeed me soy milk, baby. You give me soy or almond milk. I don't care. I don't care what boob it's out of, baby. You give me soy.
Cato Kaelin at the Comic-Con, at the Wizard World Comic-Con all weekend long. Starts today, goes through Sunday at Stevens Convention Center. Go see him.
Go see me because I actually do pictures for free.
Yeah.
$5,000 for Dave. And but come by and no, it's free. And Cato, we'll do some shots now. Please, picture shots. Okay, I love
thank
Chicago.
You.
Thanks. I'll see you there at the Wizard World Comic Con. Wizard World.
Thank you. That's Cato Kaelin.
Thanks, Cato.
Have a great time in Chicago. It's 9:41 in the morning, 720 WGN. It's the Steve Cochran Show. Hey to all our friends at CLTV. Thanks for being with us. You can follow us on Twitter at Cochran Show, at WGN Radio. We're on there as well, at Dave Ennett, at Andrea Darlis, at Mark Harmon. You're on there, right?
He's at the Carm.
At the Carm, right?
At the Carm. Please follow me. It makes my life better. I'll follow you back. We can all be in partnership on Twitter.
Nice little public service announcement there. The city of Chicago, Dave, is really trying to make it easier for veterans to start businesses. And it's so hard to start a business in general, and especially a small business, and if you're a veteran. So we wanted to talk to one of those success stories. Will Post is the CEO and founder of Hound and Gatos. And you being Senor Gato, you know a little something about that.
Well, no, but I don't eat pet food. My dog does.
Hound and Gatos Pet Foods Corporation. It's an award-winning line of natural pet foods where the focus is on quality rather than quantity. And Will joins us this morning. How you doing, Will?
Good morning. It's a beautiful day in Chicago. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us as well. So tell us a little bit about your background and your struggles with, you know, leaving your post, coming back, and starting basically your own company, you know, from ground zero. That had to be a big challenge.
Right. I spent my life in the Marine Corps and loved it. But there was a time I needed to depart, and I wanted to offer my products or my pets the best food in the market. And so I started Hound and Gatos, which is 100% meat company for dogs and cats.
And it focuses on quality as well. How do you really compete with the large conglomerates? You know, you have so many out there, and again, like, you're starting from ground zero, and you have a product here that's a great product, but how do you get the word out?
Right. The bottom line is no cheap fillers. Everything is 100% meat, restaurant quality meat, no byproducts. And we spend a lot of time on social media and advertisements, press releases, to get that word out that we focus on quality only.
I guess that's the key for a company such as yours. How do you differentiate yourself from the big super companies, the conglomerates, and they've got the budgets to do all kinds of advertising, millions of dollars, and you're a smaller business. So how, aside from social media, how do you compete with that?
Well, it's up and down battle. We don't compromise. We know our goals, which is to offer 100% meat products to your cats and dogs. No grains, no carrageenan. The gums, we've been very, very fortunate to find one that does work and it's healthy, and no generic livers out there. But we just have to, you know, stay committed and focus on what we need to provide to the consumers out there.
Well, you talk about filling a niche too. I mean, by filling a niche or having a specialty, a veteran-owned business can stand out or rise above. Talk about that a little bit.
Right. Well, we do focus on, you know, what's lacking in the industry. You know, let's just pick on canned wet foods. Long story short, it's simple. Everybody else fills their products with grains in that can. We 99.9% grains or fillers, byproducts. And what we do is there is a niche out there, and what we're trying to do is fill the product with 100% real meat for the consumers and their dogs and cats, of course. It's not easy every day, but we stick to it, and we just will not include any cheap fillers in the products. And I believe that's filling the niche. You know, we try to get people to buy local only. That way they have better control of who they support, such as the U.S. veteran business only. And some of the stores here in Chicago are veteran-owned as well.
Do you think the challenge is different for veterans than for other business owners? And have you had other veterans reach out to you for some guidance?
Yes, I've spoken to many veterans out there, and it is a tough market to go against the conglomerates. I mean, you have a conglomerate that sells shampoo to pet food. You know, where is the dedication there? You know, we are in the facility weekly trying to inspect and make sure the quality is under control and everything. But it's a little tougher for veterans to go out there and start a business and get support. And like I said, if the consumers would just stick to their goals and support local businesses, they have far more control than going out to a huge conglomerate out there or a .com.
Well, that's great advice, too. And then I started off the bit, too, by saying there's so many incentives out there. And the city of Chicago is really trying to push many of these incentives through the city council, and I don't think they're going to have a problem doing it. But is it a case, too, where will people have to go and look for these? You know, they're not going to become – you have to go out and really find some of these, too, in order to kind of cut yourself a break.
Well, let me tell you, I want to support the Chicago market. Chicago's been very, very good to my brand. And there is one company out there that stands for U.S. Marines and the U.S. veterans. And there's 79 stores, and it's called Bentley's Pet Stuff. And they have stood behind veterans like you cannot believe. And they deserve a huge shout out. And they bring on companies that deserve the recognition, such as a U.S. veteran.
Will, would you say there's a surplus of veterans who want to get involved in what you're doing here, or are you kind of perhaps just searching, looking for opportunities with guys and pushing them to, hey, this is a possibility for you?
When I run into another veteran and they talk about starting their own business, I refer them to the SBA only, and then I tell them to go ahead and just go for it, dive in head first and start your brand and go out there and shop locally on retail stores that will support their brand, whatever the brand would be. But the market is there for U.S. veterans to go out and start a business. They just have to dive in, nose head first, and make it work. And I'm always available to talk to a veteran on the challenges of getting a product made.
Well, for pet owners who are interested in Hound and Gatos, where can they find your product?
Very simple. All over Chicago, Illinois. 79 stores at Bentley's Pet Stuff. I'm sure you know the name very well.
Yep.
And they support, they support U.S. veterans, and they've been very, very good to this brand only because I am a veteran.
Though one thing about Bentley's, they were on the Marcus Lemonis, The Prophet TV show, and I know that's something so I watched their turnaround, and I know that's something that he really pushes. So it's cool that they, even after they're on the show, they keep going, you know, like supporting people and really being thoughtful about the products that they put in on their shelves, not just throwing whatever out there, you know, that they, like, it's really thoughtful. So
it's important, and they keep it going.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate your time. It's houndgatos.com. And I like your packaging a lot, too, Will. It's very cool looking.
Well, thank you very much. That is my beautiful German shorthead pointer, Creed.
Yeah.
And he will live in infamy. It's sold worldwide. And like I said, Bentley's Pet Stuff, they've been so loyal to my brand. And they deserve that huge recognition for supporting U.S. businesses U.S. veterans.
I'm going to get some for Ozzy.
There you go. Hey, thank you, Will, and thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Will. What a great product. You got to get some of that. The packaging's awesome. It's almost like a camouflage-type color.
Yeah, and I kind of same coloring as my dog.
Oh,
so it's perfect. Won't be able to see him.
Bill and Wendy are coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll be back with to close out the show in just a few minutes here on WGN. All right, 953 720 WGN. We'd be remiss if we didn't give all the kids going back to school a huge congratulations and whatnot. My news feed on Facebook, everything is first day back to school pictures. I think Mark Harmon has some serious thoughts on this.
I hated the first day of school. I dreaded it. I cried every year coming home from summer camp. And congrats to all those who are approaching school with an open mind and wanting to learn. That's amazing.
Yeah.
They go back so much earlier.
Right.
God, I know. I mean, did your mom ever make you take a picture holding the sign that said, I know now we post them all online, but we didn't have the internet back in the day.
We did.
No, but did your mom ever have you, well, they didn't have cameras then. But Mark, did your mom ever have you hold up a picture that said, Mark's first day of kindergarten, 1985?
First of all, we had hieroglyphics, so.
they painted them on the wall of the cave.
Put them on the rocks.
We never made my kids hold those signs. No, I just made them stand against the school.
Did you ever have an embarrassing class picture?
Oh, yeah.
Every single one
of
them.
All of them.
No, I know we all went through the awkward phase with the braces.
Grade 6 through 8.
The girls had the permanents. You know, our hair was curly. Why do you laugh? Did you have a perm?
No.
I know men who had perms.
I don't think everybody had that awkward phase.
My, scarred for life. In first grade, I brought Snoopy. It was show and tell day as well as class picture day. So I brought my Snoopy.
What's wrong with that?
Because the teacher said, hold the Snoopy in your photo. So my first grade picture is me and Snoopy doll.
That's cute. What's wrong with that?
Because my
You're
mom
in first grade.
My mom didn't think so. She said, "Why is Snoopy in the picture with you?"
Mrs. Darlis, come
awkward
on.
And weird.
You let
you
it go
been
now.
Cyberbullied.
So
I could have been Mary, right?
Back in the day,
you felt a little too close to Snoopy. You had
but that's the thing. So everyone goes, "Oh, was that your security blanket? Was that your stuffed animal you couldn't
was
leave
it?
Home without?" No, I just brought him for show and tell.
What were you going to say about Snoopy to everybody?
I swear to God,
it's okay, Andrea.
30 years later, it's still scarring me.
Evidently.
Do you still have him around? Where's Snoopy?
I don't know. It's probably at my mom's house. It's probably all brown and tattered now.
But
its nose is missing.
I think you should bring Snoopy to the show.
No, I don't even have it still. I was just trying to share an experience with you guys of an embarrassing class picture.
We didn't have any scarring class pictures that we can remember.
Yeah, because yours were cave paintings.
They were cave paintings.
Hieroglyphics.
And your point is?
Mary, what was yours?
Ugh, I think 6th through 8th grade, they were all nasty. Unibrow, bad braces, bad haircut. It was nasty.
Unibrow. Do the kids wax these days? Does the tweezing go on?
Oh, we just tweeze.
Eyebrow wax, I'm talking.
You know, kids are a lot more casual, even on picture day. Now, when my kids went to school.
You had to dress up.
They didn't dress up. No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Today's, and now my kids are grown.
Yeah,
now,
I see a lot of sweats. I mean, we should have Sam review your kids.
We used to have coat and tie.
I know, but now
day.
Kids on the first day of school, you always dressed up. Now it seems like kids wear sweats. And not that that's a bad thing. It's just what they do now. I don't know.
That's why the uniforms were great.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
we sound old. Do your kids wear? Did they dress up on like the first day of school, or are the sweats real popular?
They well, because you know, Under Armour athleisure is popular in general. So Catherine does the Iviva, and Patrick does Under Armour. However, Patrick is now going into fifth grade, which is middle school this year. Go Cats, by the way, on the Under Armour. and so we're trying to do this whole, now you're taking your career as a student more seriously,
right,
as opposed to kindergarten through fourth grade when he was just there to play, basically. So we've bought in all shorts with pockets.
Oh, okay.
And collared shirts. That's what we're trying. And he's got to wet his hair, like fix his hair every morning.
Yeah, a little product in there.
Now I'll say his mom said, we'll see how long it lasts.
Right.
You know, so he might fall back to the Under Armour week two. But week one, we're shooting for collared shirts and shorts with pockets. So
I don't want to take this in an awkward direction, but I'm going to do it anyway. Dave, when you were in gym class back in those days, did you swim nude?
No.
That used to be a thing.
We didn't have a pool.
Did you swim?
It would have been
my
weird.
My brother swam nude.
Right? That was a thing. Back in the day, they swam nude in gym class.
Did. In the high school pool?
Yeah.
Yep. I have heard that.
Yeah.
We've talked about
we
this
had
before.
Pool. We had a swimming pool. I went to, well, South Suburbs, Stanley Park, but we had bathing suits.
I had an awesome tanked suit.
Oh, like a tankini?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We played stickball naked. That's kind of weird, right?
Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.